This is the Punk News Podcast, episode 265. Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you with Tambourine out of my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, uninstrumented, Mr. John Gentile.
I might be uninstrumented, but I'm not unequipped.
Yes, with can of Sprite, John Gentile.
With 7.5 ounce can of Coca-Cola.
And down in, I forget the name of your city. I'm going to call it, like, Clear Beaver, Florida. No?
Coconut Creek. I'm enjoying my retirement in Coconut Creek.
Coconut Creek. All right.
Clear Beaver. Podcast is over, everybody. See you next week.
Yeah, that we don't have beavers in Florida. I know there's beavers all over the place in Canada, but
and Adam hit that tambourine.
Oh, you don't know what kind of fun you have until you realize that one of your grandparents has an old tambourine in their house. Then you make it part of your life, and then your whole family hates you. But it doesn't matter because you have a tambourine.
You stole that from your grandma?
Well, I mean, they're all dead, so I don't think they care. But at some point when they were living, yes, I did. Not that I think my elderly grandparents were using this tambourine that was in their basement. I mean, potentially, but I doubt it. So we got no mail this week, John, which is great because last week we talked about all kinds of horrible, controversial stuff. And, you know, thank you, people, for not writing us about that because we did not want to have to defend our whatever positions we came up with. So we are just going to jump into it and talk about some of the news that happened this past week. A lot of stuff happened. Some of it sad, some of it cool, some of it genuinely weird. But we'll start with the sad. So we're going to start with a bit of an obituary here. We are going to pay tribute to Mr. Rico Rodriguez. He was the trombonist for the flagship two-tone ska act, The Specials. And he died this past Friday, so it would have been two Fridays before you hear this show, at the age of 80, born in 1934. The rest of The Specials, they announced, "Our dear friend Rico has passed away today. We offer our deepest condolences to his family. His legacy will go on forever. Rest in peace, dear Rico." Now, Rodriguez was born in Cuba and grew up in Jamaica. Now, in Jamaica, he attended the Alpha Boys School, which is a really super important place as far as the history of Jamaican music goes, because anyone who was like a pioneer of brass instrumentation in Jamaica went to this school. Don Drummond went there. Tommy McCook went there. There's a list of like five or six early ska and reggae people that all went to this same school as Rico.
A lot of singers went there, and actually the reason that school is so famous is because there's a particular nun there that was really interested in music, and so she kind of wanted to elevate the youth from a rough scene to something worthwhile.
Which is insane. Like, one person ends up spurning, you know, the musical careers of so
dozens.
Many people. Like, that we're still seeing repercussions from today. Like, if that nun didn't inspire all those people to start playing music, what would poor Stizza be doing? He would just be in a squat with...
He'd just be some guy in a squat.
Just some guy in a squat.
How ironic, because of a nun. How ironic.
Back to Rico, instead of making fun of the crack rock steady people. So anyways, he moved to England in the 1960s, served with a number of musical acts. He had a solo career that included a 1977 record called Man from Warika, that was of some note at the time. And with the Specials, he played on basically any track that you would have remembered by the Specials: A Message to You, Rudy, Ghost Town, Man at CNA. He was on both Specials and More Specials. So, you know, all of that band's important recordings he was a part of. He was also on the first LP from The Selector, which was another cool two-tone act that I guess gets less talked about than the Specials these days. And then has performed for many years since that as part of Jules Holland's Rhythm and Blues Orchestra. So anyways, Rico Rodriguez has died at the age of 80. So that sucks, but...
Well, listen, he had a good run. 80, that's not great, but that's pretty good. I think even though it's sad that he passed away, even though it's sad that almost anybody passes away, I mean, I think 80, he's a world-famous ska musician. He should be celebrated. He really achieved a lot in the music scene. And not only that, is the horns in two-tone ska, not Jamaican ska. Like, the horns in Jamaican ska and two-tone ska are significantly different. And Rico Rodriguez is the guy, if not one of the guys, And I kind of think of the guy that basically created the sound of two-tone ska and therefore also created the sound of the horn sound, the third wave ska. So this is a guy that really had a talent that utilized it to the maximum. And he's been in a lot of great bands, and he's, you know, been on a lot of killer tracks. So he's a guy to be celebrated. You know, what else can you say?
Oh, I mean, and on top of that, the one thing we didn't even mention was that he was an MBE. So he was a, let me pull up my list of British honorariums here. He was a member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, which I don't know what that means. Did he get a sword? Was there a sword involved? It's hard for me to say, but hey, that's something. John, are you a member of the British Empire?
I was not a member of the British Empire. I was a member of the Kiss Empire. Actually, that's not even like Kiss. Let's stop cracking jokes with this guy. This guy is a legend.
We're celebrating. We're not.
Yeah,
we're
true.
Not.
We are celebrating. Let's celebrate with it. Oh, actually, let me point out is he was in Jules Holland Rhythm and Blues Orchestra. Jules Holland was in Squeeze. That's another great contribution this guy brought to music. So his contribution didn't just end at ska. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's play track by him, Adam. What should we play? Let's really enjoy his horn contributions to music. And honestly, any third wave ska band owes Rico Rodriguez at least a little bit of credit because he really did pioneer that sound. Let's play a tune.
Yeah, so we are going to play Man at CNA by The Specials, which is a great special song. And it was, I believe, on the Ghost Town EP.
I don't think so, Adam.
Was it not?
I'm almost
positive that it was on the Ghost Town.
Maybe.
Hold on here. We got to find this out. We got to correct this so that we don't.
On a side note, is he also plays on Ghost Town. If you don't have the Ghost Town 12-inch EP, you should definitely get that because it is an amazing, spooky, unique track.
Which has the coolest cover art ever. No, sorry, Man at CNA was on More Specials, not on the Ghost Town EP.
Yeah.
The second special's full length. It was on there. So there you go. Anyways, though, yeah, I love, like, Ghost Town is one of my favorite songs. I kind of didn't want to play it on the show because I think it's pretty long. But, you know, it's a cool song that is incredibly cool cover art to that 12-inch. So anyways, so this is Man at CNA featuring Mr. Rico Rodriguez. Rest in peace.
One in nuclear attack.
And we're back. And let's just stick this one right on in, fellas. Motorhead, they're releasing a vibrator. Actually, they're releasing a line of vibrators. It looks like they've got two kinds. They've got the big kind and the small kind. And, well, I mean, I guess people know.
That is an incredibly funny way to put that.
What's that?
I don't know why that was so funny to me.
Well, I mean, sorry, Adam, I don't often have to.
You don't know the gauges? You'd be like, oh, there's like a number 8, but then there's like a number 14 or something.
We've got a 14 gauge vibrator and a 7 gauge vibrator, you know, depending on your personal preferences. So Motorhead's put out a vibrator, and I got to say, there are few less sexual things that I can imagine than Lemmy Kilmister with a vibrator, you know. But hey, tweets their own, you know. We're pro, we're sex positive here. That's your thing. I'm not dissing. So anyway, Motorhead has put out a couple of vibrators, at least 4, maybe more, and they've got like the Motorhead art on them. There's Overkill on one. There's Ace of Spades. But why do they not put Orgasmatron on one?
Yeah, where is Orgasmatron?
That's what I want to know. Anyways, first of all, fellas, this is funny. This is hilarious. What do you guys take on bands selling sexual devices? And also, people thought this was great. Why is this great? But if a band puts out, I don't know, let me think, something else that has nothing to do with music, a hot sauce, why is that selling out? Why is Marky Ramone criticized for putting out a pasta sauce, but people think Lemmy's great when he puts out a vibrator? And of course, Motorhead famously has a song called Vibrator, which features 2 of the Pink Fairies. Can't be dead.
You know, I think a lot of it is just this general... And you see it a lot with older metal bands, especially this just sort of over commercialization of everything they do. It's like they stop really making records, which is not the case in Motorhead's case. They keep making records, but they stop making records and they put out the hot sauce and this thing and that thing. Last week I ate at a restaurant owned by the drummer from Iron Maiden that has all sorts of Iron Maiden shit all around it.
How was it?
It wasn't terrible. And it was, you know, my big complaint was they advertised it as this heavy metal joint, and they were playing Eric Clapton while I ate.
Is it called like McBrain's or something?
It's called Rock and Roll Ribs, and it's owned by Nico McBrain, yeah.
Can you believe that's his name? Nico McBrain is his last name? McBrain?
Yeah. Yeah. So my point, though, is that if Nico McBrain can open an Iron Maiden-themed barbecue restaurant, isn't a Lemmy sex toy the next logical step? And I think the answer is yes.
There are video demonstrations which are totally clean. Let me point out of the Motorhead thing. It's pretty big, actually. It's bigger than the picture lets on.
It was Lemmy Kilmister. You know, you don't make a small vibrator if you're Lemmy Kilmister, that's for sure.
I'm looking at this and I'm like, if that was a bullet and you shot it at a tank, that tank would explode. That's how I'm gauging this.
Is Motorhead playing while they demonstrate?
No, they have a very tastefully dressed young woman explaining the product.
So it's not Lemmy telling you how to use it.
No, it's not. There are ratings, though, on the actual, like, Motorhead's not making these in their garage. Like, there's a company.
I guarantee you, this company reached out to Motorhead and said, "We want to license your logo for our vibrators." You know,
why?
I don't think Lemmy said we need to make vibrators right now.
There are reviews of this product by people with like star ratings and like pros and cons and things like that. There's really a wealth of community contributed information about the Motorhead vibrator series. So yeah. You know, if you're at work and the boss isn't looking and you want to read something that's pretty amusing, go find this.
Oh, I think if you're at work and you need to kill some time and you got to, you know, I guess the reason why this isn't, quote, selling out is, A, Motorhead's more of, well, Motorhead is kind of punk, but they've always been sort of a heavy metal, sort of a rock band. And so the, quote, rules for selling out are different. Also, this is just so funny. I think the funnier the product is, the less likely people are to say that, like, a band is, quote, selling out or whatever. I mean, I don't really think Motorhead – honestly, if I was Motorhead's business advisor, I don't know if I'd even, like, have them do – I can't imagine they're making that much money off this. Although, on the other hand, they're getting tons of free advertising because this thing's all over the web, you know?
I like, does a band like of Motorhead's stature or at least their legacy at this point, like, do they even need the advertising? Like, I'm wondering if that's the motivation. Like, I'm sure they'd take the money, but, you know, are they looking at this and going, like, you know, someone phones up and they're like, can we make Motorhead vibrators? And Lemmy's just like, yep.
Well, I think they could use it. I mean, Motorhead probably does pretty well, but Motorhead's not making Metallica money or Green Day money, you know? I mean, Motorhead plays clubs. Motorhead's always played clubs, and you got to respect him for that. What else I was going to say is, I can't remember what I was going to say.
I'll say, though, Motorhead, at this point in their career, they probably know, you know, we got a built-in dedicated fan base. We'll sell this much of whatever they decide to put their name on. So, you know, maybe they made a calculation that, you know, at whatever deal the vibrator company offered them, they were going to make money on it. So why not? Because it's kind of a subversive product to some degree, I think they get less shit than putting your name on, you know, some fucking hot sauce like everybody does.
I remember what I was going to say is I remember my friend used to be a college radio DJ when he was at college out in Lehigh. And I was out there visiting him one time, and it was Motorhead. And we got to go backstage because my friend was doing radio drops. You know, when they say, oh, this is Lemmy from Motorhead. You're listening to such and such radio station. So we go backstage. This is like 2005. And Lemmy Kilmister, he's not a handsome guy. I mean, he's interesting looking, but he's not handsome. But we go backstage. There are six or seven beautiful women just swarming him. You know what I mean? Like beautiful women were just, like, flocking to him. And, A, he was super cool. Like, a lot of bands were, like if you got, like, six really good-looking women, like, you don't want to be giving radio drops to two jackasses that are, like, 20. Like, hey, Lemmy, we do a radio. And he was so cool. And he was like, yeah, I'll do it. And you know, we talked to him for, like, 4 minutes, not that long. But he was so cool. And the point being is if Lemmy knows how to get beautiful women to flock to his side, I trust him when it comes to vibrator manufacture. I think, you know, he knows what he's doing. That's what I'm saying.
Where do we go with this now?
Well, I know Adam E. wanted to actually make this a sad story. So Adam E., go ahead and make this a sad story. That
It bears mentioning.
I do feel like it's worth pointing out that Motorhead is touring the U.S. right now, and they've had to cancel a couple shows, and Lemmy has had to walk off, in one case after three songs, because I guess his health is not great. So I did feel like it was worth pointing that out and saying, get well soon, Lemmy. Even though we were going to have fun with the vibrator story.
That video where he has to walk off, it's so sad. I don't know why. Like, it's really sad. Like, when he's like, I can't play. And he walks off and people are like, F you. And he comes back on. And you can just tell that he's brokenhearted that he can't finish the show. You know?
He's Lemmy. We think he's invincible. So seeing him walk off like that, it's sad to see.
Well, he's done a lot of hard living, you know? And plus, he's getting older, you know? So I know we wish Lemmy the best, you know,
Cool. Well, I guess we'll move on from that. So this next one here, I just have a ton of media that I want to make mention of because there's a label that I really like out of Toronto called Buzz Records, and I play their stuff on this show all the time. And they went and they announced like five or six things over the past week and a half, and all of it is cool, and I feel like I want to make mention of it. So I'm just going to just run through just a quick, brief summary of what's going on here, and then maybe give you guys a little bit of places, a few links to go into to find out what this is all about. This is one of these things that I'm actually really excited about as far as posting music these days. I mean, we I don't know about you, John, but like I get into ruts from time to time when I'm kind of posting about the same bands, even bands that I like.
And if
I had to come on here and be like, all right, there's another Against Me tour that's going on, and then the Bouncing Souls are going to be recording in August or whatever, right? Where it's like, they're bands that I like, but it's still just like, you know, You know, I've heard these stories. I've read these things. We know this is happening.
Adam, your inflection was perfect when you did that.
What?
Like Bouncing Souls are on tour again. Against Me is putting out a new record.
What?
Leftover Cracks going on tour.
I've lived this life for a long time, John. The inflection just comes naturally. So anyway,
hooray!
So I like it when all of a sudden I can get excited about a bunch of new stuff, and then I like posting about it because no one ever comments about it when I post about it. So it just becomes this thing that I can just like yell about into the breeze. But the difference between you and me are that I can do that, and everyone just ignores my stories. But you'll do it, and people will be like, "Fuck you, John, with your bad canoes." Right, so I don't know what that's.
Stop posting, not hands. Stop posting Nelson stories.
Yeah. Oh, the garden. Another story from John.
Hey, on a side note, on the garden, some guy's like, "Oh, look, it's the two Scarlett Johansons again," and the guy like was trying to be derogatory towards the garden. I found it, and like I said, we're sex positive here on Punk News. But if I was trying to say something bad about two other guys, I wouldn't call them one of the best looking women in the world. You know what I'm saying? The reason the guy's angry is because he's got unresolved issues. Then I think he'd be a lot happier if he resolved those issues. That's what I'm saying. Adam, tell us. What's that?
I think a lot of our commenters have unresolved issues.
Adam, I know you don't have any unresolved issues. Let's hear about some of these tunes, man.
I don't know. Like, given the choice, I might want to look like two Scarlett Johansson. So, anyways. There's a whole bunch of stuff that Buzz has released over the past few days. So I'm just going to go over some of it. First of all, there was a new song from Hussy. This is a band that they call themselves, they spell it HSY. But anyways, though, Hussy is releasing a full length in, let's see, this September, actually, this week, called Basque. And Basque is a super angry, sludgy, dark punk record, and they released the song Feeder from it, and they also released there's a full album stream of it floating around online right now too, so there's stuff from Hussy to go check out. And they are on tour playing throughout the US and at various festivals and stuff like that, so we have all those dates up, so go find the Hussy dates and go find the Hussy song and listen to that. Then there was another song that came out from Dilly Dally, which is a band I've played a whole lot on here, and I've talked about a bunch. We talked about their video for the song Desire a few weeks ago. So anyways, they have a new track out. It's called Purple Rage. They also have tour dates. Their album is also coming out this month, so that is also something that you should go find. Number three on the list here, The Beverleys, who we have played on this show a long, long time ago. That's sort of like an all-female garage punk, lo-fi punk band from Toronto. They are finally releasing a full length after playing around Ontario for like, I think 3 or 4 years at this point. The full length is called Brutal. Oh, sorry, the full length is called Visions. There's a song called Brutal that's now online. And looking at the track list for this, it includes some of the songs that they've kind of had floating around on various EPs and stuff like that. They're all kind of being collected onto this full length, and a lot of that stuff is good. There's songs like Hoodwink and I think Bad is, what is it called? They have a song called Bad Company. I think they might. Yeah. Anyways, that's on there. The Beverleys are also great. So they have something coming out. So there was that. And there was one more. What was my one more? There was stuff from Hussy, stuff from Dilly Dally, stuff from the Beverleys, and a new song from Grays. And Grays, I think we've talked about maybe a little bit more in the mainstream of punk news than some of these other bands. Some people have been a little bit more tuned into what's going on with Grays. They released an album called If Anything last year. They have a new EP that is coming out called Repulsion. That thing is coming out in end of October on Car Park and Buzz Records. And they're currently on tour with Viet Cong. The new Grays song, which is called I'd Hate to Be an Actor, is really cool, and it's really different than a lot of the stuff that they've put out before. It's slow, it's stomping, it's much different than kind of the abrasive noise punk that you would have heard on the earlier Grays stuff. And it's also, I'm going to take total credit for this, something that I feel like I fully predicted in my review of If Anything, which is that I was saying at the end of it that there's hints on here of this band playing slower stuff. And when they do start playing slower stuff, it's going to be really interesting to look back and see how that evolution happened. Well, here they are playing slower stuff. But by no means worse stuff. It's a pretty cool issue. You go check it out. So anyways, so there's these new bunch of new media that's from Buzz Records there. If you guys want to go and read the show notes for this episode of the Punk News Podcast, that'll be up with the story. I'm going to link up two things that you should check out. One is a YouTube video. It is a 20-minute documentary called Untold Noise that talks about the Toronto noise punk scene that's starting to blow up right now. The other one is an article in a Toronto Alt Weekly called Now that came out in February of 2012 called Creating Buzz Records. And they talk about this label when it was just starting to emerge from that noise punk scene. And John, the amount of like collectible shit that's in this Creating Buzz Records story, I think that like as a collector would just make you go kind of squirrely in that what happened was there was a venue in Toronto's Chinatown called The Garage. It was literally a garage. And in The Garage, all of these bands that we're talking about right now filtered through and played and were kind of part of the same scene in there. This was, you know, back in like 2011, 2012. Well, when bands were playing at The Garage, the guys at Buzz basically recorded everything. And everything that they recorded, they would just sell for $2 cassettes at subsequent shows. And they back in the day would just release these like sets of cassettes. You could actually buy random cassettes that would have random shows on them that were recorded. So just like it turns on the collector archival part of my brain to hear that this stuff exists out there. So I'll post that story in the show notes too. It's really cool. I don't know if I really need comment from you guys on here because there's not really a ton of stuff to comment on. There's just a whole bunch of media that people should go listen to. But yeah, so this is, we'll post all those links and all those videos and stuff like that. There's a lot of cool stuff coming up from Buzz. You, the Punk News Podcast listener, should go check it out. And that's that part. I don't have a good seg. Let's talk about an old movie that Adam never saw. And I'm the one reading that story, so I'm just going to seg right into it. Oh, God. You know what? I've never seen this movie. Adam Eisenberg, tell the world about Angus.
It's a movie from like 1993, 94-ish. Maybe 1995. And it's sort of like your average coming of age tale. And the movie's all right. But what is more significant is the soundtrack, which was kind of a hell of a thing at the time with Green Day, the Riverdales, Dancehall Crashers. There's a very good Weezer song on there. Tilt, a whole bunch of bands from Smoking Popes, a whole bunch of bands from kind of different corners of what was the punk and alternative scene right as it was blowing up in the 90s. So they're reissuing it on vinyl, which is interesting because it was never released on vinyl in the first place. And I'm not sure how I feel about that.
My question is, are we at vinyl reissue overload? Like the AV Club did a piece a while back where they reissued Kenny Rogers Gambler, which you can find literally in the dollar bin at any record store there is. I mean, so why do we need this to be on vinyl to begin with? And also, Adamy, are the songs exclusive to this soundtrack?
Not all the songs are exclusive to the soundtrack. There are a couple. The Green Day song, I believe, is the Weezer song, I'm pretty sure, is only on there. The Riverdale song is on their self-titled record, so it's not a whole record of exclusives. But I would agree. You know, at this point, everything's getting reissued on vinyl, frankly, when it doesn't always need to. And, you know, this was a record that was never released on vinyl in the first place. I'm not sure what the point is.
I've got a little bit of insight into that. I mean, the ultimate point is that they can sell some, but it's part of a little bit of a pattern. So this is being reissued by Shop Radio Cast, which is local to me. They're run out of Niagara Falls here. They have actually a really cool record store in town. But the one of the things that Shop Radio Cast has done is that they've been able to, as they've run their kind of big online store that is shopradiocast.com, they have enough they have enough pull with the various manufacturers and stuff like that, that they've gotten into the actually pressing things onto records, like acting as a label as opposed to just a distributor themselves. And there's a few things that they've gone and they've reissued that that was them that put out that people wouldn't really question being on vinyl. They reissued like stuff by like Rival Schools, Jimmy Eat World's Clarity, the vinyl is theirs. The first two Goldfinger records reissued on vinyl are them. But they also have done a handful of kind of head-scratching soundtracks. And I think where this came from is just that, like, they stepped in and they saw that, like, this is not available. Let's see if the license holder actually wants to make it available. So I'm talking about, so, like, the list of soundtracks that they put out on SRC is kind of odd. So you have, like, this Angus one. You have the soundtrack to Clerks. You have the soundtrack to Dumb and Dumber. And then you have, like the soundtrack to Forrest Gump is one that they went and reissued themselves too, which if you think about it was back in the day, like a pretty massive soundtrack given like how much music plays into that movie. The soundtrack to The Sopranos they did. So it's odd that they have this like weird smattering of soundtracks that they've done. I've got to imagine it was just sort of like a, you know, they were looking at the market and looking at how much vinyl they were starting to move these days and going like, you know what people are going to want? The fucking Forrest Gump soundtrack. And they're probably right.
Actually, there's two questions there. First of all, if people want to buy it, that's fine. I mean, like, hey, if they can sell it, that I don't think there's anything immoral, even poor form about this. If you want to buy it, I think that's great. You know, as a collector, I would say, don't waste your money buying something that was never on vinyl in the first place, because it's not going to sound better than the CD, because the release was originally mastered for CD. So I would say just buy the CD in the dollar bin or the $1.99 bin and then spend your money on a rare record or something like that. But, I mean, people can do whatever they want to do. If people want this, that's fine. The second question is, I've been passing a Borders a lot lately near my work, and they've got a bunch of cheap CDs, actually, but they've got like really expensive vinyl reissues, like $35 for a Beatles record, or $35 for even, like, I don't know, the No Doubt record or something. It seems to me that like places like Borders or whatever get these reissues in and they just sit there and never move. Do people buy these things? Like, is anybody buying the $45 Pink Floyd reissue?
Somebody must be buying them, or they wouldn't keep on making them.
Is it that, or is it a market that will bust in that? Borders market analysts would say vinyl sales are up. Quick, let's get in Pink Floyd. People love Pink Floyd, but really, no one's buying. The vinyl buyers aren't actually buying Pink Floyd reissues.
So you think this market will bust, and we can go pick up these reissues for cheap
in 10 years? Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So to answer your one question, I'm just looking at the details about this Angus thing here. Vinyl for the first time ever has been mastered for vinyl by Kevin Gray at Coherent Studios. So I guess that's something.
He probably didn't master the original tapes. He probably just mastered the WAV files from the CD.
That's what I imagine. I think the thing too, to some perspective about this is that, like, you look at something like you know, where we're going, the Angus soundtrack is on vinyl, and it looks like there is 2,000 of these that exist. So, you know, are there 2,000 people with a lot of 1995 nostalgia out there?
Yeah.
I guess. You know, it's not a massive run. It's not like they don't have like a train full of them.
Yeah.
I still have my CD. I enjoy this soundtrack. I will not be buying this.
But, you know, that being said, Shop Radio, I think they're pretty good guys, right, Adam? Shop Radio Cash Store, right? Aren't they?
They're nice to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, hey, you know, good for them. I'm just saying, good for them. If people want to buy this, that's fine with me. I wouldn't buy it, but if people want it for whatever reason, hey, at least they're supporting artists and supporting music, you know? Better they spend on that than 3 beers at the bar or something.
Hey, I can't argue with that. So,
yeah, I would agree.
So, Adam, clue us in here. Why is the Angus soundtrack cool? What should we listen to?
There's a lot of good stuff on here. There's an early Weezer song, track from Tilt, Dance Hall Crashers. It's one of the first places people heard the Riverdales after Screeching Weasel broke up. And there's also a really strong Green Day song, actually, right around the time Insomniac came out. Green Day played a song on this soundtrack called J.A.R., and it's honestly one of their best, and we're going to play it now, so let's do that.
And speaking of Rare Records or whatever, here's a weird story. No one's sure what is going on, so we can't verify any of this, mind you. But we got a weird email at Punk News. I got an email from an anonymous – I mean, there was a name to the email, but like it didn't make any sense. And basically they said that they had a press release, and the press release was kind of weird. So I responded, can you give me more information? Didn't get any response at all. But the rumor is that there's a Dead Milkman split Flag of Democracy 7-inch that someone just found 1,000 copies of. And a lot of people know the Dead Milkman. They might not know Flag of Democracy. Flag of Democracy was kind of a brother band to the Dead Milkman back in the early 80s, 83, 84. And the Flag of Democracy even gets a shout-out on the – I think it's the Big Lizard in My Backyard record. I'm almost sure it is. I think maybe it's on Bitchin' Camaro. I think so. Anyways – there's a lot of stories going around about this. I don't know if we can speculate on any of this, but hey, I mean, this looks cool to me, man. A Dead Milkman split Flag of Democracy record. And also, this is kind of the fun of record collecting, just these weird things that appear, you know, and no one's sure about the secret story behind them.
Are we, what do we make of it then? What do you make of it? I mean, what do we do?
What do we do? I say we just let this play out and see what happens. I think the truth will come to light eventually. The press release says is that way back in the day, now we can't verify this, mind you, but the press release says way back in the day, a kid printed up 1,000 Flag of Democracy Dead Milkman records on his mom's credit card, but then his mom found out that she used his credit card and took the records from him. But then he, 25 years later or whatever, he found the records again, and his mom didn't destroy them or send them back to the pressing plant like she said she did. And so now the question is, are they going to sell them? Now, we can't verify any of that, mind you, but it sounds like a cool story, and I'll be getting one if they go up for sale. That's what I make of it.
The commenters are suspicious.
There was a great comment on the – like, this got a lot of play on our Facebook page, and there was a great comment from somewhere for someone that was just like, that guy's mom is such a dick. So I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see on this one. It has a lot of people talking.
It does.
I saw it on Reddit.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah, people are talking about this one.
Did we get name checked?
Yeah, they shared our article.
Oh, cool, man, cool.
So, you know, it's an odd one. Speaking of things, that's a nice seg, right? Because it's completely non.
Because we are script. Conversing.
Hey, it's also yes. a thing.
Since we're on a podcast, let me move on to. Oh, there is a Fear song to be released that will feature the late John Belushi. So if you will recall, Fear once played Saturday Night Live, partly in because John Belushi, the late comedian that was an SNL cast member, was a fan of theirs. What do they play? They played.
They played New York Star Right If You Like Saxophones.
Yeah, and what's the other one?
Let's have a war and beef bologna, I think.
Beef bologna.
They definitely played beef bologna.
Anyway, go find the video on
YouTube. Even the title's funny.
Yes, agreed.
So anyways, as it turns out, Fear and Mr. John Belushi, they recorded a song together, intending to release the song in the 1981 movie Neighbors. Now, Fear's Lee Ving recently remixed the track at Dave Grohl's studio in LA, and he plans to release it himself soon. So we don't know when, we don't really know anything else about it, but we know that's happening. John, any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I got lots of thoughts on this. A few more facts have come to light. Basically, people said, well, what is John Belushi? Apparently, like, this was when Lee Vang felt like really, really punk rock, and he didn't want to sing the lyrics to the track because he didn't write them and he didn't feel as though the lyrics were true to him or something. So he had John Belushi sing the lyrics. And so what's going to happen is the reissue is going to have the John Belushi vocal track on side A with Fear the Band providing instrumentation, and then the flip side will be a Lee Vang cut, I suspect a modern cut of Lee Vang singing the lyrics. I think this is, you know, it's a little understated how much of a fan of punk rock John Belushi was. I mean, considering who he was, it makes sense. And it certainly makes sense of considering who he was that he was a fan of Fear. What's interesting is I find that a lot of punk rockers these days hate Fear because they feel that they're, I don't know, not tasteful. But that's kind of the point of Fear. I think Fear is great. Sure, they say a lot of things that aren't nice, but I don't think an artist should have to be nice. And also, Tesco V, not everything he says is at face value. Like, he's saying a lot of things not because he means them, but because he knows that it'll provoke something. I just think Lee Ving's funny, and I think he's put out some great music.
Yeah, I've been on a Fear kick as of late, and I've always kind of had that impression where I'm like, you know what, like, I'm not going to play a lot of these songs for, like, my mom, but but I feel that a lot of the offensiveness is not in there out of malice. It's there to be offensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to consider the time in which it was released when, you know, a lot of punk was about that provocation.
Is it a failure of modern punk that if you came out with a band like Fear now, like, you would probably get exiled right away? Do you guys agree?
Yeah, but I think it's because the kind of provocation isn't necessarily, you know, what provoked then doesn't provoke in the same way now.
Yeah, it's hard to say what would happen to a band these days because there's way more of an echo chamber, right? So you do anything.
What does that mean, an echo chamber? Like, what do you mean by
Well,
that?
I mean, it used to be that if you were an offensive band, you might get into the newspaper or something like that. But outside of that, you know, people at shows are going to know that you're an offensive band. People, I don't know, read what? Maximum Rock and Roll are going to know that you're offensive. But there's not, you know, you're not going to necessarily have, you know, the world reacting to you. Now, the bands that were huge did, you know, people were protesting the Sex Pistols playing or something like that. But I mean, like, for, like, general small punk bands, like the rest of the world didn't give a shit that they were out there. They just kind of wrote off that, like, oh, these bands are offensive, so they're just doing their offensive thing. I feel like if you did something that was truly boundary pushing these days, you know, it'd be on, well, it'd be on Reddit and Tumblr and, you know, 10 different Gawker blogs, you know, within 6 hours, and you'd have like everyone writing editorials about how you're a horrible person. And you know, by the time any of that would have a chance to I don't know, to resonate or to maybe like, you know, move on to the next stage in your career, you'd be run out of town because it's so easy for people to find media and it's so easy for people to react to it these days. So I don't know if it's necessarily bad, that's just the world we live in.
This is related to this, actually. I got to be vague because I don't want to get caught up in this shit. But right now in Philadelphia, some heavy shit has gone down related to this kind of thing. Nothing to do with fear, mind you, but an offensive band, mind you, and some real heavy shit is going down. Well, maybe it seems heavy. Maybe it'll peter out. Who knows? But there's sort of a war, not a physical war, mind you, but a there's a big conflict between kind of two factions in the punk rock scene right now in Philadelphia. And I frequently these days, as the Punk News Podcast listeners know, find myself advocating on the side of someone whose personal views I find repulsive, but think they should be able to say that. And I don't know, is that me? Or is that because I feel that strongly in freedom of speech? Or do I actually like that, but I don't want to admit to myself that I like that? I don't know. Just more and more I find myself advocating on behalf of people that what I think they say is lame, but I don't think they should be destroyed for saying it. I don't know.
You're just a regressive dinosaur, John, and you need to get out of the way of progress.
That's what people would say, man, but I feel as though, I feel as though art needs to be defended to the utmost degree, almost to the utmost degree, even if you don't like it, even if it's mean and nasty, because I'd rather have some art that's mean and nasty and some art that isn't than shackles put around my art whatsoever. Unrelated. Let's talk about it. Let's close out with kind of a weird, kind of a sad, but definitely a weird story. And I don't think this band is real big. Actually, I think maybe we've mentioned them on Punk News a couple of times. There's a Pennsylvania band, hardcore band called Counterfeit. And the lead singer is a young woman named Haley Eady. And earlier this year, she posted online and stuff that she had stage 3 cervical cancer. And I think she posted some pictures of herself without hair, like saying that she got chemotherapy. And is it radiation or chemo that makes your hair fall out? Or is it both?
I think it's chemo.
Chemo,
that
okay.
Has that effect.
So she said she had stage 3 surgery, and that, I'll put a disclaimer here. We don't know. This is a pretty brand new topic, so we can't verify anything one way or another. This is just what we've read. So she said she had stage 3 cervical cancer, that she was getting treatment, and so she I think she might have put up someone put up a request for donations for her. And then a promoter, a Michigan-based organization called Hardcore Cares, they actually held a benefit show for her support. I think they put out T-shirts and stuff, and they raised several thousand dollars for her, if not more. Well, according to Hardcore Cares, the cancer story was fake and that she never had cancer and that it was a big fraud. I don't know if it was or if it wasn't, but that's what they're saying. And they're also saying that even though it was a fraud, we think it's bad that she did that, but we're not going to try to get the money back from her. We just want to move on. So I guess the question is, fellas, it's pretty much the lamest thing ever to lie and say you have cancer and then not have cancer and take people's money. That's pretty bad, right? Do you think in this situation an organization should try to get the money back? Because somebody with cancer really could use that money, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, to me, it just seems like people got, you know, defrauded. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I would think in a case like that, you'd certainly try to get your money back.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. I mean, you can't take advantage of people under false pretenses, even if you're going to turn around and use the money for something good. I mean, there's fuck this person for creating like this like shitty situation. Anyways, like, what do you? It just muddies the whole, you know, people that would have given money because they had actually, you know, because they felt some connection with the cause are now going to be less likely to do that because, you know, some dummy burned them, which is going to be bad for the cause of actually raising money for people that need it. So, ugh.
You know, a lot of defense that I've seen in situations like this is they say the person's mentally ill. So the question is, can someone do an act as reprehensible as that and be sane? Or is anyone that does an act that reprehensible is automatically mentally ill? I kind of think you can be sane and do that kind of stuff. You're just not a nice person.
Yeah, I think it. Either way, I mean, sometimes people do all sorts of things out of mental illness, and that's a different issue than somebody who is, you know, totally in control and conscious of what they're doing, making a decision to take advantage of people. I don't know which one it was in this case. So, you know, it's hard to entirely pass judgment on her until we know that for sure.
How would you sleep at night doing it? I don't think I could sleep at night doing it. I mean, that's pretty bad. You know, that's pretty bad. I would never do that because from a selfish angle, I would think that's bad mojo. You know, I would think I would get cancer if I did something like that, you know?
It's wrong on a lot of levels.
I don't even want to try to speculate about like what goes through someone's head when they do something like this. I know you're asking me to, but I'm not.
We've seen these situations before in the punk communities similar to this. I mean, should you seek out and try to destroy that person? Should you just move on? Should you how much pressure should you put on the bad person in the scenario? Like, how much should people band together and go on a quote witch hunt, even if the witch hunt is deserved necessarily? I mean, how much damage should you inflict? And I'll point out, I asked, should the organization go after the money? I say yes, they should, unless it would cost them more money than they would get it back, because someone with cancer really could use that money. So I know it's a pain in the ass, and I know it's annoying, but I don't think it's necessarily taking the higher ground to let her keep it. I think you should try to get it back. I'm not passing judgment on this organization. I know it sucks to be in that position, and if they don't want to go after it, I think that's a valid stance. I think, but I'm just saying, it's my personal opinion. I think the better stance would probably be to go after it, to go after the money, even though it's probably already been spent.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thing to do. It depends, again, it depends how any of these nonprofits that are collecting this money are going to have, you know, pretty stringent budgets about what they can use that money for. So I don't know how much of it you can use to like go after someone that's defrauded you before you start wasting money that would otherwise be going towards the cost. I mean, like, this is...
Yeah, that is a good point. If she's judgment-proof, then they'd be wasting money by going after her, you know?
I mean, it's sad when you see, like, how much that, you know, these organizations collect actually ends up going to, like, the cancer research or whatever anyways, and so much of it goes into administrative overhead. Well, you're really increasing that administrative overhead when they have to sue you.
Yeah.
So that's not helping.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out here too. I mean, it's wrong all of the time, but you know, this also isn't the Red Cross that can just call up the legal team and go get them. You know, Hardcore Cares is not a huge organization, I would imagine. And yeah, I mean, it may be that the costs of attempting to get it back do outweigh it.
I'd do it for free if they were in Pennsylvania, but they're in Michigan, so.
Why don't you move to Michigan, John?
and pass the bar there. Listen, let's close up with a happy story. I got a treat for you Punk News listeners. I got something pretty cool. way back in 1989, Boogie Down Productions toured Japan. Of course, you know, Boogie Down Productions is KRS-One and his hip-hop group of the time. I don't know if any hip-hop group had toured Japan before then. They may or may not have. During that tour, they released a limited release cassette that nobody has. I saw the cassette go for like $600 on eBay once. It's got about 10 minutes on each side, and this is a super rare cassette. It's Boogie Down Productions live in Japan, just doing a really raw, old school, banging hip hop show. Not like a modern hip hop show where it's really structured, or modern hip hop show where it's kind of low energy. This is a berserk, off the wall, crazy, wild show. The cassette had a hip hop side and a reggae side, and the reggae side is really cool because it's KRS-One doing a lot of Boogie Down Productions songs over top of reggae rhythms. Which is, I actually saw him do that in Oakland once, and it's awesome. This is a super rare cassette. I don't know how many there are, but you ain't getting one unless you want to drop like a grand or $500. However, because I have certain connections, I have a Sonic copy of this, an MP3 of this. So I'm just going to play the entire side B of the reggae side. I guarantee you no one you know has heard this before. This is side B of Boogie Down Productions live in Japan, KRS-One and crew doing raw Jamaican style, dancehall style, hip hop over top of Jamaican rhythms, and it's crazy. Let's give it a spin.
Crew over here, let me just say hi. That's the live crew right here.
Yo, let me just say no.
Hi. Yo. And you know what?
What?
You know what, Willie?
What's up, Chris?
We're going to have to drop the beat right now and see what time it is while there's people in here. You know what I'm saying?
This is my crew.
You know what I'm saying? This will be my crew right here, and we'll take this crew half and half. Have, right? You ready?
Right here.
Okay. Right there. Right there. All right, cool. You ready?
I'm ready.
Hit it. Come now. Come now.
Come on
now. Come now. Come on. Come now. Come now. Come now. Come now. Come now. Somebody say ho!
Yeah.
Say ho, ho!
Yes!
Say ho, ho, ho!
Yeah.
Now scream!
Yeah.
Take it, 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 sing along with it.
Yeah.
Ta-da-da-da!
know you're real hip hop. And yes, T-Dish, you know you're real hip hop. And yes, Melody, you know you're real hip hop. But KRS-One, a rockin' Oscar. When I'm in the Brooklyn, yes, we're rolling hip hop. Over in the France, yes, we're rolling hip hop. Over in America, we're rolling hip hop. Over in England, we're rolling hip hop. But in Japan, we're ruling you tonight. But in Japan, we're ruling you tonight. Welcome to reggae, whether you're black or you're white. That's KRS, you know I'm never fake, I'm catching star. The girlies is free, that's the Crackers Monday.
Oh yeah,
I say the girlies is free, that's the Crackers Monday. What?
Yes,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, uh-huh. Yo, Kenny, lick that down.
Yeah.
Take that up. Now listen up, now listen up. If you in the house, and you know you in the house, and you rhyming and everything is fresh, somebody say, hell yeah! You know what time it is, Willie?
Word.
With it rock?
I'm ready to rock.
You ready to rock?
I'm ready to rock.
Hit him, Kenny. Now check it out. Now check it out. We gonna see what time it is in here. Check it out, Will. Check it out. Let me hit him. It takes one DJ to control a sound. It takes one sound system playing music loud. It takes one DJ to control a sound. What KRS, welcome to make the party live. Well, now my name is KRS, and then I'm rocking on the mic. And then me coming in the dance, but I'm sniffing on my hand. And then me rocking the mic before the crew called Japan. Willie T on the mic with the microphone set. But now we're rocking on the mic. When my man Kenny P, we do not stop the microphone until we see things. Because KRS-One is in the house right now. Say ho! Say ho! Say ho! Now scream! Well, now my man called Ron and the dance is a ho. And then we're coming it down because we're busting up the show. And sitting on the side with a t-shirt and a man. Any Japanese girl, they must understand. Because we're coming in the dance and then we're coming in the dance. KRS-One, you know you must understand. And that we're coming in the dance and then we're coming in the dance. KRS-One, you know one must understand. Well, now Willie, you wanna get live?
I'm ready.
You wanna get live?
I'm ready.
Yo, get a little live if you wanna get live.
Come on, let me hear you go. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Yo, check it out.
Yes, thank you, Tokyo.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, yes. Anytime you're ready with the dad, Kenny. And we're gonna rip it down a little something like this. The name of the school is called the Mighty 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 Boogie Down Production. And we're gonna take no shot on the mic tonight. Here we go.
Yes.
Wa da da ding, wa da 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 ding. Listen to my 9mm go.
Bang.
Wa da da ding, wa da 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 ding.
What?
This is KRS. Been a crack killer by the name of Pizza. Had to buck him down with my 9mm. Said I had his gun, I said, no, what to you, stupid? But he tried to play me up, and KRS-One
knew it.
Reached for his pistol, but it was just a waste, cause my 9mm was up against his face. He pulled his pistol, and he went up for the bullet. But just before they felt it around, well, this is what I said.
Say,
why that that thing? Why that that thing?
Wait,
listen to my 9mm go.
Hey!
Oh, what that that thing? What that that thing? You know what? This is KRS-One.
Yes!
Tell them what you're playing, Kenny.
Live.
Eat some, eat some, eat some. Hit them. We're gonna mellow out.
Yeah.
Rewind, rewind, rewind. You wanna get live in here, Kenny? So you should have your mic right there. Hit him.
A-D.
Check it out. KRS and Melody live together with T-Nice and
breath control silent, breath control alone, breath control alone, breath control silent, breath control alone.
Wow.
Well, it's KRS-One, yes, the teacher, I wear clocks and only night seeker, in your speaker, is a new star, I dedicated to the intelligent child, in the front row, or behind me, we're gonna put somebody far for the 90s, you want lyrics,
yes.
We come correct, PTP, only moving with respect, to other MCs, and can't believe me, when I rhyme it sound just like a CD, we don't lip sync, we go all live, on stage, I bring about 4 or 5, well that's T-Nice, Sydney and Melody, myself, Harmony, and Willie D, we just rumble, we just crumble, while the MC crew just crumble, they want dances, they want lighting, they want effects to make them look exciting, but it's frightening, cause without that, the whole crew is wick, what BDP comes with the cheapest, and perform miracles like Jesus, a total respect, we achieve it, and the big headline, I can't believe it, let's go, breath control, silent, breath control alone. Breath control, silent, breath control alone. I want you all to understand I'm down with BDP. I got so many stars, but I'm not an MC. I am a teacher, rap, and of course I am back. Because these other MCs are here also.
Wick,
so BDP will teach them, say we will teach them. BDP will teach them, say we will teach them. All about the guy who verses down, but then he lies. What is to you?
He's a part-time. Oh,
yes,
oh.
Yes.
Come again, man.
You ready to get him?
This one on the right.
Yeah.
Rough.
Let's get busy here, Kenny.
Let's get busy.
If you love hip-hop music,
whoa, whoa, whoa.
We're going to do it like
whoa, whoa, whoa.
This is the lyrics.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Let's say hip-hop roll, and these are the industries out here, can't take it.
Hip-hop roll,
and these are the industries out here, can't take it. Rap music, we want the rap music. Way back in the days,
what?
1979, a fat band made the record using rhyme. In the same year, come the Sugar Hill Gang with the Pow Pow Boogie and the Big Bang Band. R&B, disco, pop, country, jazz. All thought hip hop was just a little fad. But here comes Grandmaster Flash nonstop. And right after Flash,
Run DMC drop.
Now, they had to make a pension to the scale. Where other music fail, hip hop prevail. See, rap music has gone platinum from the start. So now in 89, we're getting present as our man. Is it because we got the 89 vision?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Or is it because it's a unanimous decision?
Hey,
that hip hop rule, and these other industries out here can't take it. Hip hop rule, and these other industries out here can't take it. Rap music, we want the rap music.
Come again.
All right, that is it for this week. We are podcast@punknews.org if you guys want to get a hold of us. You know, if you like this show, please tell people about it. Go on to iTunes, rate it, whatever you have to do. And I think that's all. We'll see you guys next week.